It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. After months of tense negotiations, members of Congress passed an eight-year, $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. The bipartisan package covers highways, trains, broadband, drinking water, and more. Here's President Biden speaking this weekend after passage of the bill.
I don't think it's an exaggeration to suggest that we took a monumental step forward as a nation.
We're talking now about the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure bill and what it means for states around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the bill does enough to update America's aging infrastructure? Where do you see the most pressing need for this kind of investment? Where would you want to see this money go, the part of it that's coming here to Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Joseph Schofer is a professor emeritus of civil and environmental engineering at Northwestern University. He's an expert in transportation policy and host of a podcast called The Infrastructure Show. Joseph, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be back with you.
Well, President Biden has called this a once-in-a-generation investment. How big a deal do you see this this bill being and what it means for our infrastructure?
It's a big deal, and I think you can say once in a generation in honesty. It's a large amount of money. Keep in mind that when you talk about $1.2 trillion, right, about half of that was already slated to be spent, so it's an increment of 100% on that amount. It's a large amount of money, and it addresses really two things. The first is that we've fallen significantly behind in maintaining some really important aspects of our infrastructure. And the other is it's an opportunity to jump ahead, particularly in terms of advancing to new technology, electrification, addressing climate change, and doing other things that are critically important on our agenda right now.
I've seen some compare and contrast with the recovery bill passed in the early year of the first year, I think, of the Obama administration after the Great Recession. That one was more of a jobs and stimulus program. Instead of saying what infrastructure do we need, the focus was, you know, how soon can you get the cones out there? Do you think this one is going to approach things in a more orderly way to meet the infrastructure needs we have?
I think so. I think one of the reasons for that is that this one is a long time coming. It wasn't the result of an emergency. There are ideas in the bill, and the bill is literally 2,000 pages long. I was kidding one of my colleagues and saying I've been working very hard on it. I'm on page 4 right now, and I have a long way to go. It's very dense. There are many, many ideas in it, many of which are not being talked about in the press, but they're high value and they're really important. And you know, I can speak about them. I think they're maybe a little bit less interesting on the surface, but they have to do with process and decision making and data and being wise about the way we spend money. But yes, it's very important. It puts money on the table to do things that, frankly, we should have been doing all along. And so that's when I talk about falling behind. We've fallen into what I would call an infrastructure deficit, and we desperately need to crawl out of that.
I am interested in the process of how this money gets spent. How specific is it? Is it, you know, this bit of money goes for that pothole at mile marker 3 on I-94? Or is it, hey, states, apply for your needs and we'll give you some of the money for your best project? How does this actually go out and work?
It's both. It's money that's directed to broad program areas with general criteria and a charge to the operative department at the federal level as to how the money should be allocated. Not so much how it should be spent, but how it's going to go out to organizations and to the states and the metropolitan areas. But there are elements to the bill which look a lot like what we used to call earmarks, where a member of the Congress would say, I'll vote for this bill if you build this bridge in my town. So it isn't quite that specific, but there are a number of components in the bill such that if you look at them carefully, you say, oh, they're really talking about this particular facility or this need in a particular state. And one could step back and say, well, that's politics and we shouldn't be making decisions that way. And yet, I guess I'd say the same thing in a different tone of voice and say, that's politics, and that's how we make decisions, and that's how we move things through the Congress, whether you like it or not. But I would say in general, there's not that much of those so-called earmarks. The money is broadly directed.
You mentioned that you saw some important things in the bill that wasn't being covered much by the media. We love to hear about those things here on Central Time. What stands out to you that's been under the media radar?
Well, process issues, how you do planning, how you make decisions, how you allocate resources. So there's a component and research. So there's a substantial amount of funding, thinking about it as a researcher. It's not substantial in terms of building a bridge, but a substantial amount of money that would go into research that would help us make better decisions in the future. Research about resilience. Research about safety, research about travel forecasting, which is a kind of mundane topic, but to a substantial degree, it drives planning, decision-making, evaluation in the transportation field. And it's something that we've been, it's a set of tools that we've been developing for the last 50 or 60 years. And yet what we discover is that our ability to forecast accurately is not very good. And so this bill has a small chunk of money that says, let's take a look at how we're doing that and find out ways to do better. There's money in it for data, and data is mundane, it's dull, except that if we don't make decisions on that are driven by data, then we fall into the realm of 100% politics. So those kinds of, if I could use the term decision-making infrastructure investments, I think are very important in the long run. There's one that sticks in my mind, and that says to the state departments of transportation, define what your criteria are for project selection, put them on a poster outside your door so people know how you select projects, and you have to do that in a transparent way. And I'm not saying that any particular department is failing to do that, but not all of them do it very well. So this is these kinds of things I think are framework investments, and they're really important.
Talking to Joseph Schoeffer, infrastructure expert at Northwestern University, host of the podcast, The Infrastructure Show, looking at the infrastructure bill just passed Congress, signed by the president. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Scott is with us in Menominee. Scott, hi.
Hi. I was wondering when the money basically starts coming from the government and it starts making its way to the local level, are there any oversight or kind of checks and balances just to make sure that a contractor out in the area doesn't get the money but then subcontracts it out to the point where almost nothing gets done with the money at the end of the day?
Scott, thanks for the call. Joseph, concerns about, you know, once that money's going to the contractors, what kind of oversight is there over the people actually doing the work?
You know, when we think about it, it's our money, and we want to make sure that it's well spent. So the state agencies through which most of this money is going to flow have obligations for oversight. There are obligations in the legislation for reporting back on specific projects, but over longer intervals, over periods of a year and multiple years. Obligations to report back to, for example, the Department of Transportation on progress made. So there is an audit trail to be followed. I think there's a really strong commitment to that. And so I have high, you know, there's always slips in these kinds of processes. This is a lot of money to spend, and the expectation it's going to be spent in five to 8 years. So it's literally doubling the rate of spending. But the oversight connections are written into the bill, and the expectations are that they'll be followed.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Joseph Schoeffer, Professor Emeritus of Engineering at Northwestern, about the recently passed bipartisan infrastructure deal, what it means, how it's going to work, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about what's in that infrastructure bill, how it'll affect us here in Wisconsin? What are your thoughts on the other proposed human infrastructure bill? We'll be talking about that also on the show tomorrow. Where do you want to see this infrastructure bill put its money in Wisconsin? Do you see specific needs in transportation, whether that's cars or other forms of transportation? How about broadband access in your area, clean water, lead pipe replacement, all in the bill and more? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Joseph Schoeffer, Professor Emeritus of Engineering at Northwestern University. Talk to us about the recently passed bipartisan infrastructure deal. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your hopes for how this money will be spent here in Wisconsin and beyond. Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Joseph, you had mentioned earlier, you know, some of this is fixing what we already got. Some of this is getting ahead and new stuff. What stands out to you in this investment when it comes to building new things?
Well, there's money in here to support charging stations for electric vehicles. And that's an obstacle to advance the market for electric vehicles. People are particularly concerned when you get outside the major metropolitan areas that their vehicles won't have the range, and it discourages purchases. So there's some investment there, some subsidy there that will help advance us in the direction of electrification of the automobile and truck fleet. There's a significant chunk of money for broadband and that is high-speed internet service to push into low-density areas and rural areas. And one might think about that as really an alternative to transportation. That is, a lot of people found ways to work from home during COVID-19 and are probably, many of them are not going to go back. And access to broadband is important for education, for medical services, for socialization. It's interesting to me when I think about the history that over time, the federal government invested in rural electrification to move electricity out into rural areas, into farmlands, and also to subsidize telephone service. So this is just simply an extension of that. But I think it's a really important extension because the internet has become so central to our lives.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in trying to take a leap forward. We should not be spending a lot of money on charging stations, which require a lot of people to sit in lines waiting to charge their cars for 2 or 3 hours, 45 minutes to 12 hours for that matter. But I would like America to look at electrifying the roadway. There are ways to electrify the roadway in which you can get the motive force of electricity from the roadway into your vehicle and charge your batteries as you go. Sweden has this. Sweden has started this. Finland is going to initiate this, and Michigan, Indiana, and Utah are investigating this.
Interesting. Tom, I hadn't heard about this. Joseph, electrified roadways as opposed to charging stations.
Yes, there's research and development that's moving in this direction. It presents an interesting opportunity and an interesting challenge because as you think about it, there needs to be some a strong compatibility between what's in the vehicle and what's in the source of energy, whether it's a charging station or that's fixed or something that's built into the roadway. So that requires a government industry collaboration. There is work going on in this area, and I would guess that as has been true for the automobile and most technology over history, what you see on the ground today is not necessarily what you'll see in use in 2 decades or 3 decades. But Tom brings up what for me is a different issue, a really complicated and important issue, and that is as we invest today, we ought to have our eyes on the future. That is, we ought to invest systems and technologies that are going to support our needs further into the future. And that presents a difficult problem. You know, do you invest now in what may be in 10 years a dead-end technology? I think we need to, on the one hand, it would be good to be clairvoyant about that. It's not easy to do that. And so that suggests to me, as an engineer, that what we need to be thinking about is flexible technology, where we can invest in one direction and translate that into a different direction as opportunities arise in the future.
Tom, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Jimmy next in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hello.
Good afternoon. I'm a little concerned at how this money is going to be divvied up, because I know there's some states that don't really take care of their infrastructure. They don't have much for gas tax or really support their own roads and bridges locally. So I'm just wondering, is this going to be done on a per capita basis, or are there sweetheart deals that have already been cut to get votes in Congress? Just a little concerned on my tax money going to a state that really doesn't support their own infrastructure on a regular basis.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. Are there going to be free riders here in effect, Joseph?
I'm sorry to say, I think Jimmy's going to be right, because there have been free riders all along. And the point he brings up really is part of the explanation of why we are where we are right now. And that it is, overall, we haven't invested enough to maintain our infrastructure. And some states have done worse than others. However, when we look at all 50 states and compare them to the federal government, the states have actually done better at raising the funds and deploying the funds to invest in their infrastructure than has the federal government. And I'll give you an example. The federal gas tax right now, which provides a substantial amount of support for federal grants for highway construction and maintenance and for capital grants for transit facilities, is now 18.6 cents on a gallon of gasoline. It was 18.6 cents on a gallon of gasoline in 1993. And since then, cars have become twice as fuel efficient. So we're getting more for our money out of the federal motor fuel tax that we're paying. And we're seeing an increasing number of electric vehicles who aren't paying that at all. That said, you know, you can ask the question, why hasn't the federal government raised its gas tax? About 35 or 40 states have seen the handwriting on the wall and the deteriorating pavements, and they've raised their gas taxes. So what we hope and what we'd like to see is everybody pitching in and saying, look, this is what it costs. These are facilities, services from which we greatly benefit, and we have to pay for them. And if we don't pay for them, in a decade, we'll be in the same situation we're in right now.
Thanks for the call. We're talking about the infrastructure bill that just passed Congress with Joseph Schoffer from Northwestern University, host of the podcast, The Infrastructure Show. Back to your calls now with Dave in Toma. Dave, hello.
Yeah, hi. Once again, it's the government, the federal government, digging into our pockets to redistribute our money as they see fit. And it should stay at the local level. And if a community decides not to take care of themselves and people don't like it there, they're free to get up and move. The government has always been very inefficient at distributing funds, at taking our funds and redistributing them. And I used to be kind of proud. I didn't mind paying taxes. God knows nobody likes it. But now I feel like I'm just flushing it down a rabbit hole with all the programs that especially this administration is coming up with.
Dave, thanks for the call. Joseph worried about this being done by the federal government, wants to see it happen at the local level, Joseph.
It needs to happen at all levels. The federal government has a constitutional interest in interstate commerce, and an interesting characteristic of the road network is that it's all connected. And so if parts of it don't work in Wisconsin, it can affect what's going on in Illinois and in Michigan and Iowa and in Minnesota. So there needs to be an integrated perspective, certainly at the technical level. We raised the issue from the previous caller about free riders, and there are that. But if we don't maintain the infrastructure as a nation, then we won't be a nation.
Dave, thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. Mitch is with us in Wautoma. Mitch, hello.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
So I was just curious, kind of going off what the last caller said. I'm not sure I agree completely with what he said, but one thing I did want to mention, I had heard a discussion on WPR not too long ago about just the kind of exorbitant cost of construction in America versus other established countries. And so despite the, you know, big or small, you know, price tag we have on this bill, I was wondering what your caller thought about how far this money might go to actually, you know, increase our infrastructure to the place we need it to be at.
Is this going to be enough, Joseph, to build the expensive projects we need?
Well, it depends on where, what application of the money you're looking for. In some of the parts of the bill, it'll make a big dent. In others, it really won't. I was looking, for example, at the amount of money allocated to replace lead service lines for water supply to households. And it looks like this is only a fraction of the money that we want. The fraction isn't absolutely clear, but it's order magnitude 10% or less. But it's a start, and it's much more than we've spent before. I think I would just go back to the point I tried to make earlier, which is that what's critical is that we not lose the momentum. That is, that we look at what it takes to sustain the kind of investment that's necessary to maintain our infrastructure in a state of good repair. Not necessarily to expand, and not necessarily to add bells and whistles, but to assure that it's functional. We haven't, on average, we haven't been spending enough. This brings us up to speed, but it doesn't really guarantee sustainability. And at the state and local and national level, I think it's something we all need to be concerned about, because it affects our economy and it affects the functioning of our society.
Mitch, thanks for the call. And Joseph, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Glad to be with you too.
That's Joseph Shover, Professor Emeritus of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Northwestern, host of the podcast, The Infrastructure Show.